I've seen a lot of financial planners try to do what I'm doing, and they just didn't have their financial house in order, and they were open for a year or less than 2 years, and just they didn't plan appropriately as far as what was realistic expectations for the growth through their business and what they need to support their family.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. Today we sit down with Lucas with Level Up Financial Planning, and this is unique. We have not had a financial planner on the show up to this date, and part of the reason is because honestly the industry is just slimy at times. I know there's a lot of amazing financial planners out there, but so much of the industry is kind of hiding behind a lot of legal mumbo jumbo and trying to intentionally make it confusing. And so honestly, it's kind of hard to come by financial planners that really are keeping their clients' best interests at mind. And so I love Lucas's approach. I don't say that to diss any other financial planners, but it's a complex industry. And I really love how Lucas is doing things differently and how he really is building a unique brand. He has completely doubled down on making Level Up Financial a brand that is creating great content specifically for his audience. He really has niched down and he's seen success as he's done it. And so I think you'll love this. It's a bit of a different episode. I realize that, but I think it'll be really valuable for you in your own financial journey, but also just in encouragement of seeing a business owner who is doing things differently in his industry than everybody else. So let's go ahead and dive right into this conversation where we get to learn more about Level Up Financial Planning. Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the podcast designed for business owners, marketers, and entrepreneurs wanting to make an impact through the work that they do. I'm your host, Seth Silvers, and my passion is building brands that last by marketing with stories. On this podcast, we share stories with you of people who are growing their businesses the right way. And we teach you how to grow what you're doing through storytelling and authentic marketing. Let's get started. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Small Business Storytellers. This episode, I'm sitting down with somebody who's become a friend of mine in the last year through the Fort Collins startup community, Lucas Caceres with Level Up Financial Planning. Thanks so much for being on the show, Lucas.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Seth. I'm a huge fan of your podcast and everything that you do on your business side as well.
Thanks. I appreciate that greatly. And I'm excited about this because I just think I've always been fascinated by the finance world. And also, I recognize that in the finance world, I think I know enough about it to know that there's a lot of people who are like unintentionally slimy. Like I don't think they're out there trying to manipulate and trying to steal people's money and stuff. But just the way the finance world works, it kind of like works in favor of the financial professionals and not really in favor of the masses and stuff. So I really like that you're doing things differently.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I was at the Denver Startup Week last night and ran into like another more traditional financial advisor or whatever they want to call themselves. So he called himself with like a really smirky way of saying, so like, I'm a wealth management advisor. Or something like that.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's cool. But yeah, like everything about him, I was like, oh man, like this is exactly what I'm trying not to be. So I'm glad that I'm doing things.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah. That's great. And I don't, if there's financial advisors or CFPs or whatever listening to this, I don't want them to feel like, oh my gosh, these guys don't like me. I love the financial world and stuff, but I just think that times have changed. Like it's just different. And so I think it's one of the industries that there's just a really big need for innovation in how it works. So I've kind of let the cat out of the bag. You do finances. Give us some context for what your life looks like right now and tell us a little bit about your business.
Yeah. So I'm coming up on the end of my second year of business. I'm based virtually out of Fort Collins, Colorado. And really at this point, it's kind of about at that stage where I'm really happy and excited about the future. It wasn't always the case. There was definitely a scary kind of initial launch and the scary first year, I'd say. But kind of all through year two, I've grown a lot of confidence. I've seen the trajectory and the types of clients and relationships I've been able to start building with some of those clients now. It's just been super rewarding and I'm excited about where the future's heading. And it's given me a lot of confidence to do additional things to kind of further increase kind of like my brand awareness and what I really want level of financial planning to be moving forward.
That's awesome. And how did you get into this? Give us some of kind of your story of leading into this and tell me about, like, there's always a moment where like, and I think oftentimes starting a business is fairly premeditated, where it's usually an idea that's bouncing around our mind for months or years or whatever, but there's always like a moment where we're like, all right, I'm doing it. So what led up to that moment and kind of describe that?
Yeah, I don't want to dive into certain aspects of it too much because it's not my story to tell, but I was working for an independent financial planner and it was really an amazing opportunity. Like most people that were finishing up college and starting their career would want to start at a company like this. I gained a lot of experience quickly due to circumstances going on in the company. And so I had to really step up and carry a lot of responsibilities across the board for like the highest clients. I had like $4 million in assets all the way to the clients that were technically mine as far as helping and in specific more individually one-on-one. So I gained a lot of experience there, but at the same time, we still had people coming in saying, hey, I need help with this. And we had minimum assets that they had to be able to invest or for us to manage of theirs. And that minimum was $500,000. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of people that are not going to meet that. And that was something that kind of grew frustrating for me. And I don't know if there was necessarily a moment, but yeah, there was things going on at that particular company where it's like, man, I'm going to look for other opportunities. And there was a lot out there and I was getting a lot of interest from really great companies. But I think the moment where it came to realization is I got this really great offer from a really prestigious company for financial planning, but they really wanted me for the financial planning, like my analytical brain, and not as much of the client face and sitting down with clients, which me 10 years ago would have been like, oh, that's perfect. That's all I want to do. But over the years, I've really developed and found everyone's stories interesting. And I know you're really big on story stuff. And so what happened is I had a choice to make. I could stay where I was. I can go leap into this new opportunity where everything would have been perfect for me like 5 to 10 years ago when I wasn't necessarily who I am today. But with making that decision, and I knew I definitely didn't want to stay too long-term at my current company at that point, but I felt like if I would have went to this position, it would have been way too cushy. I would have been paid way too well, and I wouldn't have to work nearly as hard. And even though it feels like every year I'm getting like super old, I still feel like I have a lot of energy. I have a lot of passion to kind of dive in and help people as much as I possibly can. And that was something I was afraid of. If I went down that route, this new cushy job, that I would never be able to start a company that had always been kind of swirling around in the back of my head, which is the ability to help people regardless of how much money they have now and really remove that investment minimum. I still have a monthly kind of minimum because I have to be able to make my business sustainable. But at the same time, now I'm able to work with people regardless of their age and regardless of whether they've made a lot of great financial decisions in the past or not. Typically, the ones that are reaching out to me are the ones that like really have no clue and they've may have had like a recent life transition or a major event occur where they're like, I need to really focus on this.
That's awesome. How has it been going? Like, how long have you been doing this? And, do you feel like kind of carving out this like more unique, more personalized piece of the market? Has it worked?
So that the first 5 to 6 months, I'd say maybe it's not working. And so again, I'm on the end of about 2 years and all indications are that my business is going to be able to be open as long as I want it to be at this point, which is a nice feeling. And it wasn't always the case, especially in that first 5 to 6 months.
Right.
And I think at that 5 to 6 month period, I came to the realization that, hey, what I'm doing isn't working. And it's because I'm trying to create something that's different from everyone else, but I was going about it in the same way that I would have if I was working for that same company I was working for previously. So really holding on to a lot of old traditional things, telling myself I can't do video, telling myself I can't talk a certain way or necessarily be myself. And I think that was another reason too to push me in this direction is there's not a lot of people in the industry, as you kind of highlighted. And yes, there's a lot of amazing people and there's even really great advisors and financial planners. But the problem is it's definitely a smaller amount than what should be the case. And so, yeah, there isn't a lot of changes that need to go on there, but I've just never felt comfortable. Like I love the work and the clients and being able to help them, but I've never really felt comfortable with the rest of the industry as far as when I go to conferences and things like that. So all these things that I was holding on to was stuff that I didn't really like about the industry.
Right. And so you were kind of trying to be like, you're kind of trying to do your own thing, but now you were just like fitting into the box of what the industry told you a financial planner is.
Yeah. Like I was just barely outside of my box. I was kind of like tipping my toe outside of the box, but I really wanted to be outside of the box. And yeah, after that 5 to 6 month period, I just came to the realization like, hey, like I think I'm confusing people. I'm confusing myself as far as what I'm doing here. And I just really relaxed and started being more myself, putting more of myself, more of my family stories, my background, my financial kind of decisions that I've had to make in the past into all the different pieces of content right. that I've been producing. And again, I think this kind of falls in line with a lot of what you preach is, yeah, kind of going back to a lot of those stories, those personal stories that are really meaningful, where I think before when I was producing content, it's like, here's the information and what basically anyone could go on Google and find that same information almost in the same way I was laying it out right. that first few months. And it was that kind of transition period where I really started enjoying the content because now it doesn't feel like I'm just writing like a report for school. I'm like actually enjoying it and I'm just excited about anyone who's going to read it that hopefully it's going to have an impact for them. And so I started to own stuff that way. I started changing things within my business as far as how I create different things. I added some achievements for my clients to kind of like, I don't know if you play video games or anything like that, but that's kind of level up financial plan is like, have fun with it. Basically, I know.
Yeah, tell us more about like that brand and how you incorporate those
yeah.
things.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely want level up financial planning to be more empowering. And my tagline is like, take your financial confidence to the next level. And how you do that is by constantly just improving across different areas of your life. So if you just need a little bit more education, we can do that and you'll be more confident to take that next step and kind of keep leveling up one day at a time, 1 month at a time, whatever it happens to be. And that's kind of where it stopped for that first five to six months. Like, all right, like I have a cool name. I have a cool like thought process of how people are going to do these things. But then I wasn't tying too many other things into it. I'm sure you've seen some of my content, but I started going to having more like pixelated letters. And as often as I can try to pull in some like retro, like video game looking things, have more fun, have more like themes around that stuff as well. And the achievements that I mentioned, I tied it into giving back to like the community and stuff like that. So as my clients make huge, cool milestones, I kind of create like a little emblem like, hey, you bought your first house, like this is worth like 50 points and all these points add up at the end of the year, and then they get weighted as far as my clients can vote on the charity of their choice for me to donate 1% of my profits to. So wow. It's a cool way of like gamifying it in a meaningful way and then also keeping track of their progress.
That's really cool. Yeah. And what's some of the like feedback you've gotten from clients of like in relation to the like fun, dare I say, like quirky brand that is fully you? Like what have you heard from them about it?
Yeah, I think the most, everyone is always telling me like how cool it is. Like even if they're not clients, like just so many people are giving me great feedback. So that's definitely helped for sure along the way. And one of my clients is like a user experience person. So like, he's all about kind of like that branding and like interaction and things like that. He's been like the biggest like supporter of like, oh, like I listen to your podcast and I like the level up sound and kind of the gaming music intro at the beginning. And so he's always like noticing stuff and like saying, hey, that's really cool. I like what you're doing there. So it's huge compliments from him. But yeah, I kind of gradually get different comments from different people. And
yeah,
I wouldn't have any of that if I didn't embrace this kind of like 5 to 6 months in.
Right, man. I love that so much for two reasons. One, it's just really smart because the majority, like I've heard many statistics and whatnot about how much of a percentage of our nation's wealth is in the next like 10 years going to be transferred to like the millennials, pretty much like people that right now are in their 20s and 30s. Like soon most of the wealth in the country, if not already, I don't know, you could probably speak to that, is, you know, it's transferring to people that, like myself, and I'm probably on the younger age of that bracket, but when I was growing up, I was playing like Mario and N64 and Sega Genesis and a lot of these awesome platforms that now are like kind of retro and stuff. So it's cool because there's that, like, I mean, it really does, like, even though I don't game a ton now, like I'm still super fond of, like, you know, I would play a lot of those games anytime because it's just like there's so much memory behind it. And the second reason I love what you're doing is because, like, I'm just such a firm believer that the more authentic of yourself, the more authentic version of yourself that you are, the better you're going to be able to serve your wife, your family, your clients and stuff. And it's over the last few years, it's been interesting for me because it's kind of fallen into like self-care to where I feel like I'm being selfish at times. But in reality, like if I am not loving myself well and really like authentically showing up in the world as Seth Silvers in my unique flavor, then I'm not going to be able to give what I have unique to the world and stuff. So I love so much that like you have found success once you were like, you know what, I'm going to be who I am. And that's different than anybody else, but that's going to be how I'm going to be able to best serve it. So I love it because it's such a good example of that.
Yeah. And I think that I'm sure it turns a lot of people away, and I'm coming into that comfortability where I don't need to work with everyone. And again, I think that didn't happen at that 6 month rate, but I think it started developing earlier this year that, yeah, I really only want to work with people that really want to work with me and enjoy working with me.
And that's that should be kind of the goal though. I think that the way that we market our businesses should be more polarizing. Because otherwise, like if you're not polarizing your marketing content, then you're going to spend all of your time trying to figure out who's right for you and who's not. If we market ourselves, it's just like, okay, cool. I serve everybody. Like I serve anybody that wants to be wealthy. Then like you're going to spend so much of your time, going through, is this the right person or is it not? As opposed to putting like branded authentic content out there that kind of like separates some of the people that are right for you and that are not right. So, I mean, I think it's brilliant to like, it's hard and it's nervous because we're like, you know, nobody wants to turn people away in business.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad you brought that up because it reminded me another thing I did. So at that same point, I kind of gradually started tiptoeing more into a niche, which I always knew I had a niche in the background, but I wasn't promoting it. I wasn't really tying that to myself. And I was running into a lot of that. I was meeting with a lot of people that really weren't going to be a good fit for me. And so at that same time, when I was loosening up and just being more authentic to myself and where my strengths are and who I'm able to best serve and add the most value, like I realized that it is the tech employees, which is who I was serving before when I was at the previous firm I was working for, but they were in their 50s and 60s and now they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s. So focusing on a niche has also been a kind of a part of that trajectory change for my business as well. Right. So I'm enjoying the content I'm producing, but a lot of it is because I'm more focused niche-wise on how I'm producing it, like who I'm talking to, and then I'm being more relaxed in myself while doing so too. So I'm glad you reminded me that niche has played a part. And I think that it wasn't until maybe just after a year into my business where I was like, all right, I'm not going to tiptoe back and forth on this. I'm just going to say, hey, this is my niche. And I still have other people that come to me that are outside of that I enjoy working with, but there was also so many more people that I just wasn't a good fit for. And as we were wasting each other's time in that first meeting often.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really good to know. You have a unique business model, and which is necessary because the traditional business model, like I said before, kind of, it just operates on like, you know, stealing as many like small fees here and there that pretty much consumers have no idea about. And so, tell us about your unique business model and why you stand behind it.
Yeah. So there's two big things that then I'll describe like how it like works more specifically, but one of the whole pieces of my business too is I did want to be different. So that requires transparency. The only person I'm ever paid by is my clients directly. So that's very transparent. And like you said, that's not, I'd say like 90% of the time, if not higher, that's not the case. Like there's so many hidden fees, hidden ways that your advisor or planner may be getting like commissions and things like that. So that was a huge piece of it. And then the other one is being a fiduciary for my clients. And I do that by being like, I'm a part of the Certified Financial Planning Professionals, as well as I'm a part of NAPFA, which is a fee-only organization for advisors. And if you do a quick search on just where I'm located up in Fort Collins, Colorado, there's like five planners and like the nearest 25 miles that are like fee-only financial planners. And why that's important is because it means that they have to act in your best interest. That's what fiduciary stands for. And almost all of the industry is not required to act in your best interest. And a few that are, they kind of get the choice. They're called like hybrids. So they can take that hit on and off, but they don't have to necessarily tell you. It's going to be buried in all the documents you sign, but most advisors don't have to operate in your best interest. I am required by law to do it based off of the organizations I signed up with and the oaths I've taken.
So are you a fee only, or are you, do you do any commission, or are you fee only, or how does that work?
Yeah. So fee only. So, and okay. Again, that makes it very transparent because my clients are the only ones that are ever paying me. So my clients and my other clients and like that's basically it. So there's no reason for me to do anything that's not in their best interest because they'd either not become clients or they wouldn't stay clients for long, or they would lose a lot of trust there. And so that's where that transparency and that being a fee-only fiduciary for my clients is important. And so how that actually works and translates for most of my clients, now that the unique business model that you pointed to is they actually pay me on a monthly kind of subscription basis. And so it's very transparent. They know exactly how much I'm getting paid, which I think is cool because it forces me to be at the top of my game all the time. I can't be like, oh, they're clients now. I can just sit back and not have to do much, which is what most financial advisors do. Typically, they work with people that are rich. They have $1 million and they maybe talk to them once a year and they don't have to do all that much else. Where my clients have a lot of big issues going on and they're buying their first homes, they're getting married, they're having children, they're changing careers, changing jobs. All these things are very finance impact oriented. And so I always have to be there and be providing the value because that's just another expense they could turn off if I'm not providing value. And so again, it's just very transparent and I have to do what's best for them and it make sure I'm constantly providing value. And that's not the case for a majority of the industry.
Yeah. So for those listeners that this is not your natural world, kind of typically it's like, okay, a financial advisor gets 1% of your assets. And so it's kind of like, it's just taken from your growth. It's taken from your assets growth. So it feels free because I'm not paying a financial advisor on a monthly basis and they're just taking 1% of however much my money grows.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound like that much. You know, it's like, okay, 7 or 8% a year, maybe 10%. If my money grows, then like, okay, losing 1% of that, like, oh, I can manage that. Talk to me about the huge, like, I guess just value of 1% over like a 20 or 30 year period? Like, what does that end up actually being, and why is that? And then you stack that to where sometimes it's 1% for the financial advisor, and then sometimes it's 1% or 0.5% for the mutual funds they put you in that they get incentivized. Like, sometimes people are paying, you know, 1% to 2.5% just to have their money managed. And talk to me about, like, give me some actual, like, you know, ballpark numbers of like, what am I losing over a 30 year period if I'm paying, you know, if I'm paying my financial advisor 1%?
Yeah. So I can't run the numbers without like pulling up a calculator and kind of running through those things. But I am glad that you pointed out, I think 1% is where a lot of people think that that's just how much they'd pay. And a lot of times they say like, oh, maybe that's fair, like 1%, because that's what you would find if you just did it like a quick Google search. But I'm glad you mentioned that that's not the total cost. There's other additional costs. And at the previous firm I was working at, it amounted to about close to 2%. And so that's a big deal if they're not providing value outside of just investments, because the investments at the end of the day are going to do their own thing. And where financial advisors and financial planners can actually add value on the investment side is by making sure you don't do dumb mistakes and act irrationally or emotionally, which there's been a lot of studies and research that shows like, yep, advisors actually do add value in addition to their fees. Typically, it's about 3 to 4% a year annually. So in most cases, as long as the advisor is actually doing a good job on that behavioral management, making sure that you're not freaking out the next time a recession hits and doing the wrong things at the wrong time, there's definitely value there. The problem is most advisors prefer not to talk to you ever again after they have your money, and they're not really inclined to provide value. Like they'll shuffle things around and make it look like they're doing stuff, but it's really, really easy work. There's computer automated systems that are doing a lot of that for them. So it's not like they're spending a lot of time or creating a lot of value for you unless they're having conversations with you that are more about than just what your investments are doing. But yeah, the 1% just compounding things over time, it's pretty ridiculous. If you're not actually getting value for that, I think is the biggest part. And then if you're paying substantially more than that, well, they have to be providing almost two times the value then if there's a lot of other additional hidden costs that you're not aware of.
Yeah, I saw something the other day that though the difference in 1%, for the difference from like a 2% to a 1% kind of fee, like over time, it was a difference of about 30% of the like total retirement. And so like the example that I saw, like it was the difference of like, okay, you know, this person had 1% in total fees, including, you know, your fund transaction fees and different things. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, it was about, I think they ended up retiring with like $1.8 million. Okay. You take that to 2% and that dropped to like $1.2 or $1.3 million. So it's like the crazy thing of like, people don't realize how much that adds up with compound interest and stuff. So how is fee-based financial planning? Like, give us a spectrum for what are people usually charging like for fee-based financial planning? Because this whole thing sounds great, but if you're charging $1,000 a month, then like you're kind of then like, you know, the guy who has $500,000 and like, you know, I guess like how is fee-based financial planning? Cause it is probably in some ways it's probably a little more expensive on the front end, but you're making more money on the back end. So like help people understand, oh, okay, I'm a normal person. I don't have a ton of money, but I maybe want to take advantage of this. What could they expect if they go out there looking for fee-based financial planners?
Sure. So yeah, if you're looking for advisors that do what I do, I think there's two main organizations you want to search for. So you can go to napfred.org or xyplanningnetwork.com, and they have search databases, and you can search by your profession, your career, your interests, or your location. So they give you those toggles to be able to figure those things out. But as far as working with an advisor that doesn't have minimums and you can kind of pay on more of a monthly basis, that number is really reduced, and the price range varies pretty substantially. I've seen a few people that charge drastically less than what I do. And what happens is a few months into it or a few years into it, they end up rapidly increasing their prices. There's also people that are way above what I charge. And basically that means that whoever they're working with, their income has to be like in the $200,000 range. I'm pricing myself kind of because I do want to help as many people as possible. And I need to have a profitable business, but I don't have to be ultra wealthy. Like me and my family can live pretty great actually off of like $50,000 or $60,000 of like net income. And that's just because that's how we built our life. That's how we operated before we kind of came into our careers and started making more money than that. And so we're comfortable with lower amounts. I think the lowest amount that someone would pay me on a monthly basis at this point for a single individual, it's $115 a month. And so I estimate they'd probably need to be making somewhere around like $70,000 to $80,000 of income to make that make sense. And then obviously I need to be providing a lot of value in order for them to stay on board and want to do those things. And then for a household, it's $165 a month. And so that's about like $110,000 right. of household yeah. income.
And I will say, like, because I've sat and talked with you more, like, you're not just pushing buttons and shifting around money and stuff. Like, you're connecting with the person and helping them understand how to be more financially independent and stuff. So, like, you know, I know you told me that, like, you know, sometimes that comes to just like helping people understand their financial goals. Sometimes it comes to budgeting and different things. Like, what you do is a lot more involved than your typical financial advisor and stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely more customized because I have to find people where they're at and then find out how to help them kind of consistently right. level up. And yeah, I'm sure at some point there's going to come a day where like I maximize everything they can possibly be doing and maybe they don't necessarily need me any longer. It's been cool that all my clients have basically valued the relationship, and every single time we're talking, we're finding new ways to create value and have them make progress. So that hasn't been an issue or concern yet. And I think that's something we identify in that first meeting too. It's like, hey, how does this look in the next 1 to 2 years? Right. And then, yeah, we'll continue to reassess the situation.
Yeah, that's awesome. And kind of as we wrap up, like a few quicker questions just related to the business side of it. I think that a lot of people look at like kind of financial planners, real estate agents, some of these like, I don't know, solopreneur type of industries as like some people don't necessarily look at you as a business owner. Talk to me about like,
what's that? I said, I feel like a business owner. Yeah.
Talk to me about just like, what are some of the business things that you've learned as you've been building your business over the last 2 years?
I think relationships, networking, being flexible, being able to quickly change direction are valuable parts of being a business owner. And I think maybe why there is a huge difference, I think, between being tucked under another company, which is what most financial advisors do. They are kind of in that in-between gray area. Like they're working for themselves. If they don't produce, then they're not making money. And so it's kind of like a business from that standpoint, but they're still kind of tucked under a company that has predefined processes right. and have they probably have certain ways of getting people connected with clients and stuff like that. So it's very different than what you're doing and what I'm doing, where we're standalone companies and
right.
We have to come up with a brand in, we have to come up with everything from ground zero basically.
Yep.
And so I think the biggest things I've learned is, yeah, you have to be flexible. I mentioned having a pivot 4 to 6 months into it. I'm also going to be making a cool pivot I'm excited about in the next couple months here. So at my 2-year anniversary mark, I used to, and still kind of will for the next month or two, offer hourly services too, which really opens up regardless of your income the way I was seeing it. But yeah, a lot of people weren't interested in that. And the people that kind of were, again, were outside of my niche and they just couldn't relate the value of working with an expert and things like that. I'm sure things that you run into sometimes too when you're meeting with people. And so I'm actually going to graduate or kind of kill off that service and the must-ken words, and I'm actually going to be replacing it with a new service that's going to be more value-oriented to my current clients, which would be actual tax filing and tax preparation. So I already do tax planning. It's a huge part of how I provide value for my clients, helping them understand and be more strategic about how they manage their taxes. But I've never been able to file the taxes for them. So that's something that I'm going to kill off this other one and then launch this new one. And it's going to be cool. It's going to be called Power Up Tax Planning. And so it goes with Level Up, and I'm able to keep the same up, and I'm going to be changing the color scheme of that. But I'm really excited. And so it's cool to be able to create these things as an entrepreneur. And I think we have to, especially with how quickly things are changing in the world around us, technology-wise and things like that. We have to constantly be improving and creating efficiencies and providing value in as many ways as we possibly can.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's great. What are your quick no-brainer business tips for business, or no-brainer finance tips for business owners?
Yeah, so I think the two that come to mind, if someone's in the launch up stage, and even if you're not in the launch up stage, like, understand what you're investing in. Because I know a lot of people, even a lot of financial planners who should have their stuff kind of straight as far as the finances side go, they invest in things that are never going to provide that much value early on. So understand what the trajectory of your business is going to look like in the first 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and invest according to that. Because I see a lot of people just invest in everything day one, and then they're cash strapped, they're stressed out, they need to do stuff, or they're going to have to close their business. Where, like, a lot of things you don't have to do until month six or after year one. Like, I'm just now going to be rolling out some cool like client packages. I have like customized logo like boxes, and I have like pens and magnets and stuff like that. Stuff that it wouldn't have made sense for me to do when I had four clients. But now that I'm starting to kind of solidify a lot of the other aspects of my business, I can start reinvesting on those things that are more supplemental and not really core to the business. And I see a lot of people just do everything at once, and then they're wondering why they need to quickly ramp up in order to not go out of business. And so, yeah, just understand what your business model is going to look like. Understand what that trajectory looks like, because the worst thing that you could do for your clients or your potential clients, I've seen a lot, is not be there for them when they need you to be open for business, and it didn't have their financial house in order, and they were open for a year or less than 2 years, and just they didn't plan appropriately as far as what was realistic expectations for the growth of their business and what they need to support their family. So that's one aspect. And then the other one, again, financially related to, is there's a difference between reinvesting in your business to help your business grow, and then there's just wasting money in your business. And I think a lot of people just get confused about how those things work. And it makes sense to reinvest in your business if it's actually going to grow and create stuff. But if you're just doing it for the sake of pouring money back in, just kind of assess your goals and make sure, like, is that even what you want to do? Or do you want to travel? And you mentioned self-care, like, there's other things you could do with the money that may even be more impactful to your clients. If you show up to work in a better mood or just more excited, looking healthier, it's gonna have them get more value out of that service than you buying like just random things that are supposed to, or things that you think you're supposed to be doing, or your other businesses that you've networked with are doing. Like, don't do things just because other people are doing them. Do them because they're actually going to add value to you, either as the business owner or to your clients. If it's just supplementary, then really reassess those things, because I see a lot of people just waste money, and sometimes they do it too from just trying to reduce their taxable situation. But if you're wasting money to save a fraction of that money in taxes,
right,
doesn't make sense. You're wasting 75% of your resources, basically.
I would enjoy talking about that more, but for the sake of time, we'll wrap this up. But yeah, that's really good advice and stuff. I love that. What have been, last kind of question as we close up here, what have been some helpful resources for you as a business owner? Whether, you know, everybody's kind of different. It might be books, might be conferences, might be podcasts, might whatever it is that's just kind of been helpful resources.
So definitely podcasts. And I would say, and not just because I'm on your podcast today. Like I mentioned, as a fan, you launch your podcast about the time where, like, I was toying with it in my head. Tyler Brooks, another marketer up in our area in Fort Collins. Both of you spoke at Startup Week Fort Collins. Both of you started podcasts around the same time, and I started listening to them. I was like, hey, these guys are local like me. Like they're business owners like me. And so it was cool to tune into podcasts like yours and then being able to relate to you more specifically because I know who you are. A lot of these other podcasts I listen to are still great, but it wasn't necessarily motivating me to think that I could do the same thing. And I started doing that. And I've been having a lot of fun doing it, as I know that you have as well. So podcasts have been a good resource. I think the self-care aspect too, just being able to relax with my family has been a huge, huge boost. Going on runs and things like that is something where I get some of my best, maybe my wife would say, kind of like craziest ideas for subjects or content and things like that. And so, like, I tend to do better when I'm doing like exercise, things I enjoy, hanging out with my family. And even though I'm doing that, I'm still able to think about stuff and still be present. And I get kind of inspiration, motivation, and really that accountability aspect too. Like, hey, this is why I'm doing all this crazy stuff and trying to make everything I can possibly work, because I like the balance that I have now being a business owner. I'm able to spend a lot more time with my children now as they're very young compared to, I didn't see my son that first 6 months I was working a traditional job because he was sleeping by like shortly after I'd get home.
Right.
And now I'm able to meet with my clients in the evenings and afternoons and just kind of build a life that's more specific to how I want my life to look and live the values I want to live.
That's awesome. That is so great. I think more people need to pay attention to that. What is the best way for people to get in touch with you or find some of the content you're producing?
Yeah, so all the content lives on levelupfinancialplanning.com. So it's just my business name, levelupfinancialplanning.com. And yeah, you'll find all sorts of things. I create strategy guides, which are my fancy way of calling them blog posts. But yeah, again, kind of a part of that branding, and it is something that took me a while to do. I created cheat sheets, which are my versions of infographs. I have videos. Some of them, I think I just started recently calling them like bites, like BYTES, video bites. And then I started my podcast, Techie Personal Finance Podcast or Bootcamp, which is a podcast. And so all those things, you'll be able to navigate my webpage, find what's of interest to you. And they cover a wide range of topics. And I actually have a strategy guide that I created for like new business owners too. So I'll shoot you over that link, Seth, in case you want to include that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there's a lot of things you can do strategically, especially in your first year or two when things are lean and mean on the income side, to be strategic about your tax situation and kind of other areas of your life too.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. I encourage you all to check him out. I know you have a popular podcast on how to retire early and a lot of other great content on that podcast. And also I encourage the listeners to connect with you on LinkedIn, because that's a whole nother thing that we didn't even talk about strategically like you've kind of been like a LinkedIn wizard and have really like used LinkedIn really well. I know we've talked about that off the record. So if you're wondering how to utilize LinkedIn well, then Lucas is a good person to observe and take some tips from. So.
Yeah. My business wouldn't exist in its current capacity without LinkedIn for sure. It's like at this point, 65-70% of my clients. And I think when I met with you last time, it was like 50%. So yeah, that's been a huge resource. And again, it's because I've been able to be more niche focused and be able to curate that content and connect with people more in a more focused way. So
that's awesome.
If you aren't going to connect with me there, hopefully that gives you a little bit of how to utilize that tool.
Totally. That's great. Well, Lucas, thanks so much for being on the show. And to listeners, I encourage you to follow Level Up And let Lucas know if you have any questions at all about anything that we talked about. But thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Seth. I had a lot of fun.
This podcast was produced by StoryOn Media and Marketing. And our passion is helping small businesses use stories to grow their business. And we create a community that helps you do just that. So if you don't have the budget to hire a big agency, but you really want to learn how to navigate online marketing, how to tell better stories, and really how to build a brand that lasts, then our program, Success with Stories Elite, is for you. Every single week, we give you new trainings, content ideas, and content blueprints to make marketing with stories easy. To join our community, head over to www.successwithstories.com/elite. Or just click on the link in our show notes. Again, that's successwithstories.com/elite. Have an awesome day and let us know what you loved about this episode by leaving a review on iTunes or your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you so much. My name is Seth Silvers, and I will see you next time.